Faith Middleton in New Haven, and this show is about the richness of life. It's the book show, A Live Call-In. Great reads coming your way in this hour. Thanks for listening in Connecticut, Rhode Island, Massachusetts, and New York, including the East End of Long Island. Let us know about a book you liked. Book club members, what are you reading? 203-776-9677. That's 203-776-WNPR. You can tell us on Facebook now. Search The Faith Middleton Show or tweet us at FaithWNPR. We wanted to let you know that the books we discuss, that any of our folks on the show discuss, will be at our website, WNPR.org. Just click on Programs for The Faith Middleton Show. Here are my book buddies. Roxanne Cody of R.J. Julia Booksellers in Madison, Connecticut. Lee Jacobus, editor of the college textbook A World of Ideas. And Rose Quiello, professor at Southern Connecticut State University and Quinnipiac University. Roxanne Cody is on the phone this time because we asked her to report to us from one of the book conferences, book conventions. Roxanne, welcome to the show by phone.
Thanks.
So which convention are you at?
So I am in Austin, Texas, and I am actually calling from Book People, which is one of the largest independents. And the meeting is a collection of 25 of the best independent bookstores in the country. We get together about three times a year for book practice, best practices. So Powell's Books, Harvard Bookstore, Book People, R.J. Julia, North Shire, Book Passage, Tattered Cover, all the great stores. And it's been pretty fun to get together because there's a lot of good news.
What are you all discussing in terms of books that are flying out of your independent bookstores now?
Well, so what we find is that the stores are about the staff suggestions, whether they're, some stores are finding all of a sudden, like, here's a big, big seller in lots of independent bookstores, which, I'm sort of missing the boat on, and it's paranormal fiction for adults.
So that brings me to Anne Rice. As you know, Anne Rice's has started on this Wolf series.
Right,
she's
right.
Left vampires for the moment and is I'm sorry, Roxanne?
Vampires and Jesus. There was a while that very religious, and now she's sort of back to the genre that she had been writing in for so long.
So because of what you all see as independent booksellers in terms of popularity, I'm wondering what's going to happen with her new book. She did The Wolf Gift Chronicles, and now the new one is out, The Wolves of Midwinter. And for those who don't know, this is about a man who's bitten by a wolf and then becomes a man-wolf. And there's a whole category of people through time who have been members of this kind of semi-human species. And so I've been reading some interviews with her. She's having a really good time inventing a whole new world for these characters because she's left the vampires. So, Roxanne, that sounds like, in light of what the sales are like at all the independents, that this is probably going to do well.
Yeah, I think it is. And on the young adult side, all these dystopian novels, starting with The Hunger Games, are just crazy popular. And, here's the good news about some of this stuff. And romance is selling wildly. And then, obviously, there's all the Donna Tartts and Alice McDermott's that continue to do really, really well at the independents. But, the encouraging thing is there's a lot of reading going on.
Yeah, and do you feel like there's more reading going on than before?
I think what's happening is I certainly think there's more reading going on. Some of it is more reading going on the internet, little, snapshots of this and that. But one of the reports that I just read shows that the biggest increase in sales in 2013 for print books is in the 18 to 34-year-old.
Oh, that's interesting.
How counterintuitive it's that to everything that we think about.
Wow. Roxanne, I want to ask you about an event for the organization called Read to Grow, and we'll explain what that is in just a minute. But let's have a quick few words, all of us. I'm with Rose and Lee also, about Wally Lamb's book, which is out. His novel is We Are Water. So go ahead, Roxanne. Are people coming in already and saying?
Oh, yeah. It's hard to say it's the greatest of all of Wally's books because I love every one of them. But I just started it. I just think there's a lot of great writing by writers that have been very, very popular and best-selling. And I think Wally's new book is going to be one of the biggest fiction books of the fall season.
And for those who might not know, Wally Lamb did a book that so many people know. She's Come Undone. I Know This Much Is True. The Hour I First Believed. She's Come Undone was the one that was selected by Oprah's Book Club and just took off like crazy and has made Wally a household name and a nicer person this couldn't happen to. Also, such a talented guy. So I'm just starting it too, Roxanne. So we'll watch what happens. But this is a story about a woman who's in a marriage and ends up there's art in this book. There's a woman who falls in love with another woman. There are family secrets and how I'm sorry?
Really? Family secrets?
Yeah. Yeah, really. Is it?
Could that be?
Yeah, in every family. Okay, so Roxanne, tell me about Read to Grow. What's the organization?
Read to Grow is a statewide literacy organization, and we do two things. One is we deliver books and packets in person to now 53% of the newborn moms in the state, and we collect and distribute gently used books, about 150,000 a year. Our mission is to teach parents that they are their baby's first teachers, because the biggest predictor of not being ready to learn when you start school, and therefore the biggest predictor of poverty, is the lack of hearing language 0 to 3. And studies have shown that poor kids, regardless of gender or race or ethnicity, are hearing 13 million words by the time they're 4, as opposed to 45 million words that a non-poor family is hearing, and that has absolutely impacted their brain development as regards language development, and it makes it that much harder for them to begin to be ready to learn to read. So our goal is to get that message out and to get as many books delivered to anybody who calls us, whether it's one little girl who calls us asking for books, or it's clinics, or it's schools.
Has that happened? Has a little girl called your...
Oh, we get... Let me tell you about this little girl, and her name was Desiree. Her name is Desiree. She was 8 years old. She called, and there were two things funny about it. One is she called us and said she called Read to Grow and heard that we deliver free books, and we said, absolutely, we do. Can we talk to an adult in your house, and we'll get your address and deliver them and do all that? And she called back 2 minutes later, trying to sound like an adult. So not only did we deliver books to Desiree, but she then told her school in New Haven that she found a place with free books and organized them to. So we deliver. We have a van. We deliver. You could call 203-488-6800 and ask for books.
Yeah, so you can just Google Read to Grow in Connecticut and find out more about that. So quickly, tell me about your event.
So on Saturday, we're doing two things. We are having a book swap. You can bring in up to 10 books that have been published in the last couple years, pay $5. All the money goes to Read to Grow, and take home new books. So if you've got all your books hanging around that you don't need to keep and want some fresh ones for free, you get free books and then $5 for Read to Grow. And we're also trying to do a book drive. We are desperate for gently used books for 0 to 5. Our demand for used books has gone up about 27% this year. So it's going to be at R.J. Julia's at 11 o'clock on Saturday.
That's in Madison, Connecticut.
Madison, Connecticut. You can find out all the details on Read to Grow's website. And, you know, we're really excited. We think it's a fun way to freshen up what you've got to read without spending any money. And, you know, get us more books to give out to these kids. There is one book for every 300 families in poor neighborhoods,
Roxanna,
as opposed to 14 books in other neighborhoods. Okay. One book for 300 kids.
A quick question, Roxanne. When kids, you talked about 13 million words versus 45 million words. If you're from a family that has resources, you're exposed as an infant to as many as 45 million words versus 13 million for someone who's from a low-income household. So I wonder, is there any research about whether the kids who are lagging behind catch up?
Well, there is, but it requires an enormous amount of intervention. The study that was done, that was a 10-year longitudinal study, shows what you can do to then correct it. But one of the ways that I talk about this is the educational system already is challenged to help everybody. So delivering kids that at 4 years old need remedial work is an enormous amount of strain. It can be done. It's not easy, and it's extremely labor intensive, and then has to be pretty individually designed.
All right, Roxanne Cody on the phone. She is in Texas at a meeting of independent booksellers, the top ones in the country. And we have on the line one of our callers, Alex. Welcome to the book show, Alex. What are you reading? What are you liking?
I am reading Imagica, written by Clive Barker.
Imagica.
Yes, and I've always thought of him as a horror writer. I've read tons of his short stories, but this is a pure fantasy novel, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, so you fit right in, Alex, with the trend that a lot of independent booksellers are seeing right now, and other booksellers too, I'm sure. Online sellers, everybody's seeing this category that you've drifted into.
Yes, anything by Neil Gaiman I would love to suggest as well. He's amazing.
All right, that's great. Thank you so much for calling the show. Roxanne, please stay where you are, and we're going to come back with more recommendations on great reads. I have a whole pile of books sitting in front of me. The other book buddies are like that, too. We'll be right back. I'm Faith Middleton. Ray Hardman, you sound terrific. Find out what we talk about on the show online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs to find the Faith Middleton Show. And there you will see the list of books that my book buddies and I are talking about on this for great reads on the show today, or letting you know that something is just out. Roxanne Cody is on the phone. She's at an independent booksellers meeting in Texas. Roxanne, this fits in with what you were talking about. Veronica Marion of Middletown, Connecticut, wrote to me to tell me that her son, Trey Rollins, was 4 years old when he was told that she had breast cancer. And so they had quite a lot of communication about it. And Trey decided that he was going to write a book about his, you know, what it's like to when your mom has an illness like this. And it's called It's Just Out: When Mommy Had Cancer. And so they just had a big event last night for this book, an event for how to help children cope with challenging events. And there was a bit of a book signing, you know, just terrific. So we wanted to let people also know that When Mommy Had Cancer is out, and it's done by Trey Rollins. So, Rose Quila, what do you have?
So, Faith, I was trying to find a clever way to introduce John Green's book called The Fault in Our Stars. Lee just told me it's a quote by Shakespeare from Julius Caesar. And it's about a 16-year-old girl battling cancer. And I was thinking, now, how can I talk about this book and not have our listeners roll their eyes, click their tongues? Because she meets Gus at a support group. Gus also has cancer. And the two of them begin by exchanging their favorite books. And then the book takes us through their relationship, their ordeals. The some harrowing descriptions of their pain and their anger. And so, you know, whom can I recommend this book to? Well, I want to say every young adult out there. It's
why is that, Rose?
Because I don't think a lot of young adults today, and I get them just when they're finished being young adults, have a clue as to what some young adults are going through. But this book is, but the lesson here is bigger than that. This is about two kids who help each other through a terrible ordeal. It's it is at once melancholy, philosophical, sweet, and that's the romance of it. But I do think the lesson for us, and it's for grown-ups too, is about our need to be there for each other. And so I've already purchased it for friends' kids. It's called The Fault in Our Stars by John Green. It's terrific.
Thank you, Rose. Tom, Faith Middleton, and the gang, welcome to the book show. Tom, are you
Hello?
There? Hi, go ahead, Tom.
Hello.
Hi.
I really have kind of pretty strong bias against fiction. I only read just nonfiction practically
okay.
all the time.
Yep.
But there is a fiction book that's not going to be in the stores that I would highly recommend for, like, the quality of the writing. It's got Sokolov, who's a Russian Nobel Prize, and it's Quiet Flows the Don, and the Don flows home to the sea.
Mm.
I mean, the breath of emotion yeah. and life and hopes and dreams and destruction and finding everything gone at one end of one's life and no one left. It's really an extremely moving book.
Oh,
Quiet Flows the Don flows home to the sea.
And the Don flows home to the sea. Okay, thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, thanks. Lee, you know this book.
Yes, it's a good – it's a fine book. It's, you know, The Dawn is the River, and it's in the heart of – it's one of the great veins, so to speak, or arteries of Russia. And, yes, it's a superb book. And I'm sure it could be found in a lot of bookstores.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good book.
Lee Jacobus, what do you have?
Well, I want to honor Alice Munro even more than this the Swedes have done. She's just gotten the Nobel Prize. I mean, that's an astonishing achievement for a woman writing entirely a lifetime of short stories. I think it ennobles the short story again. And she, fortunately, just has a brand new book out called Dear Life, and it's a collection of stories. Alice Munro, amazingly, she's about 83. Amazingly, she lives 20 miles away from the school that she went to as a child. And that's an important thing because, well, yes, she's traveled and she's lived in other places too. But she has a wonderful sense of place, and her stories are all set in Ontario in Canada. And they're about small lives, so to speak. But their small lives are filled with riches, and that's what she finds. This book, Dear Life, has several stories about women and their experiences and other people and their experiences. But she ends with a collection of four things that she kind of calls stories, but they're not. They're actually recollections of her own life. And when she finished this book, she said, you know, I think that's all I'm ever going to say about my own life. And they're wonderful, wonderful moments to, you know, describe a simple life, a child's life in Ontario. It's beautiful.
Mm.
And she also said that she probably was going to stop writing now. So I say go get this book and read it. It's a beautiful book. It is a deep deeply touching book, and it's called Dear Life by the Nobel Prize winner of this year for literature, Alice Munro.
And that's M-U-N-R-O. Oh, yes. Okay, thank you. Roxanne Cody is on the line with us from Texas, where she's at a meeting with independent booksellers. Our number here, if you're in a book club or an individual reader and you've enjoyed something, please tell us. Maybe you didn't just finish it. Maybe it's one of those books that's a book of your life. Whatever it is, we would love to hear from you because this is a kind of word of mouth about books. 203-776-WNPR. Roxanne, what do you have, a book to recommend?
Well, I read Still Writing by Danny Shapiro a couple of weeks ago. And Danny Shapiro lives here in Connecticut. She's had any number of books, predominantly memoirs. And this book, you know, she's got this wit about her, this observing quality. So it's the kind of book that is great if you are a writer, because she has both practical advice about how to make the time to do it or not use excuses, or how she organizes her day to make it happen. It's a little bit of a memoir, which I loved. I'm not a writer, and loved it for that. And if you're not a writer, it makes you think about writing. I was just so happy reading this book. I love the voice that she writes in. It's very familiar, friendly. You feel very connected to her. And I adored everything about the book.
I've read some of the book too, Roxanne. I've been reading it in sections and have liked it very much. So, Still Writing by Danny Shapiro. 203-776-9677 here on the book show. I wanted to talk about a novel that has come out from Carrie Brown. She's one of my favorite novelists. Oh. And I think my favorite book by her would be The Rope Walk. And I think that's true for a lot of Carrie Brown readers. She is the type of person, Lee and Rose, who does a kind of quiet, meaningful story about quiet lives, and with great tenderness, without any schmaltz, but great tenderness and understanding, a sense of deep understanding about the little actions in a life that are significant. She's someone who has a kind of emotional sensor that's quite beautiful. And so this is a book called The Last First Day, and it's about a man and his wife. This is Peter, who's head of a New England school for boys, but it's completely an unknown place, way off in the woods, and his wife, Ruth. And you see these flashbacks in their lives together, and you don't quite understand each of them, but as the time goes on in the novel, you begin to understand who they are. Very beautiful, beautiful lives. It has an ending that was a little bit confusing for me, but worth reading this novel, despite that. And I'm just crazy about her work. If anybody wants to look up her other books too, please do, especially The Rope Walk. This is Carrie Brown, The Last First Day. She's a great writer. All right, Deirdre, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the book show.
Thank you. I'm calling about a book that I just finished that's called In the Shadow of the Banyan. It's by Vidae Ratner. And she's a Cambodian woman who was a refugee to the United States. I have a personal connection to this because I was teaching in Phnom Penh for 7 years, but she has such a positive outcome to what was a really difficult story. And she paints a beautiful picture of Cambodia in the process of writing this book.
Can you say the name of it again? I didn't quite catch it.
Yes, In the Shadow of the Banyan.
Oh, the banyan, like the banyan tree.
Yes, B-A-N-Y-A-N.
Okay. And it is a memoir?
It's not. It's a fictionalized account of her childhood because she didn't quite trust her memory. Mm-hmm. When all of that Khmer Rouge began, she was 5.
Oh. Mm.
And she was the daughter of royalty. And so that her family was in great jeopardy.
Interesting. Thank you very much.
Sure.
All right. Take care. Please call again anytime. Roxanne Cody by phone from Texas. What do you have?
5 Days at Memorial by Sherry Fink is one of the most amazing books. I think I might have mentioned it earlier. I hadn't finished it. Takes place 5 days in Memorial Hospital during Katrina. It's a hospital in New Orleans. And it, in enormous detail, goes over these set of circumstances. The degree to which New Orleans was abandoned by local, state, and federal authorities, the way this hospital was abandoned by Tenet Hospital Group that owned Memorial Hospital, about the sort of third world conditions that existed within the hospital, the heroics of the doctors and family members of doctors and other patients of what went on, and then ultimately is about the trial. One doctor and two nurses were accused of homicide because at the point at which patients couldn't be moved and the hospital was being flooded and abandoned and looted, there was a question about how some patients were handled at the end of their life. And Sherry Fink won a Pulitzer for a series of journalism articles about this. And the book is slightly underedited, but I didn't care because it is a picture of human nature, risk management, training, crisis management of a type that will really make you think about how you would operate, how we all ought to think about crisis management if we're going to deal with this kind of wacky series of weather incidences that have occurred around the country. Mm.
And the name of it again?
5 Days at Memorial.
Yeah, 5 Days at Memorial. All right, I'm going to ask for some wide... For tolerance is what I'm going to ask for, because I'm going to leave for a second the subject of books, and I'm doing that. I'm going now to print writing and reporting in general, because we have Roxanne Cody on the phone, and I'm doing that. This is about a business story that has been in the news, on the front pages of newspapers, leading network news. I'm talking about Jamie Dimon, who is the head of Morgan Chase Bank. The bank is about to pay the government the biggest fine in history. I think it's either, what is it, $11 or $13 billion.
Yes.
$13 billion. And, you know, Roxanne, I want to ask you, because we go to Roxanne often on business stories, while I have you here, here's the thing that's getting to me. At first I thought, well, okay, they're holding the feet to the fire finally. And then I started reading into this a little bit more, and I learned that, he acquired, and they acquired Bear Stearns because the government, it was during the financial collapse, was pressuring them, hammering them, saying, you've got to do it. Now, it was at a bargain rate, that's for sure. But in taking in WaMu and, you know, Washington Mutual and Bear Stearns, they had a lot of dicey things on the books. And so, you know, in buying it, they had to assume responsibility for all these things. Was it fair to now the government now turns around and says, all right, now we're blaming you for the thing you bought at our insistence?
Well, I think it's a really good question, and it's a very complicated answer, because to some degree, they're not penalizing them for things related to those acquisitions. And they're trying to isolate what J.P. Morgan did in the bundling of mortgages and the dealing with homeowners on their own. Although it's kind of mushy, and there's some people who say Jamie Dimon, by buying those companies, knew that he was being a genius by picking this stuff up cheap, and it was being way undervalued, like Warren Buffett putting $5 or $10 billion into Goldman Sachs. You know, there are people who are always smart about buying when everybody else is fleeing for the hills. And so I've read everything about this because I'm curious and interested in it. Mm-hmm. I think it's not simple. They're probably to blame for some of this stuff. My fascination is why J.P. Morgan is paying for this and under a microscope more than any other bank. Where is the, you know, where are they going back to charge people at Lehman Brothers? Where are they going back? Why aren't they looking at Goldman Sachs, who, you know, there's been enough evidence about their culpability? There are other institutions. I can't figure out. J.P. Morgan, I can't imagine, was like worse than anybody. And so I get what they're doing. The public is desperate for somebody to pay, right? They want somebody to pay for what went wrong, and this looks like the latest whipping boy. It doesn't mean they're innocent by any means. They're not agreeing to a $13 billion penalty because they're innocent, although the cost of litigation, I'm sure, is impacting them. I just, what I feel is unfair, I almost feel badly for the fact that they're the sole object of this attack at this point. And maybe the SEC is working on it in a widened way. And last week I was at a conference for the National Association of Corporate Directors, and the audit committee chair of J.P. Morgan spoke. And, you know, you realize it's never that simple. These are not people who are trying to do things wrong.
I see.
I would say that comfortably. It becomes a little gray somewhere along the way, and then in hindsight it looks horrible.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. And so to flip this around, so that in case you're listening, you say, I want books, I don't want business. Is there a business book you've read lately, Roxanne, that you really loved?
Well, I think the book that needs to be read is David Eggers' The Circle.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the press on this is about, it's a fictionalized story about the end result of all of us turning all our information over to a company. In this case, it's called The Circle, but in our world would be, in the real world, would be called Google, where we're voluntarily turning over information. So where does that all lead? I think this is the most fundamental issue that all of us are going to have to grapple with. Like, how do you, where's the line anymore?
And the title?
The Circle by David Eggers.
David, yeah, right. Okay, here's our number, 203-776-9677, a fresh edition of The Book Show, and you can find the books that my book buddies and I are recommending online at our website. Now or anytime, WNPR.org. Click on Programs for the Faith Middleton Show. Lois, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi.
This is about monkey business, and it's it's a wonderful, quirky, literate book that I'm almost finished reading. I haven't finished it, but I love it. It's called We Are All Completely Beside Ourselves. And it's a novel by Karen Joy Fowler. And it's about a family and a monkey and a psychologist. It's just a wonderful book. It's funny and it's sad. And, of course, there are family secrets. So I just thought I would put that out because I'm enjoying it tremendously.
That we are all completely beside ourselves.
Yes.
Fowler, thank you so, so much.
Sure.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Stay with it. Bye-bye. Stay with us on The Book Show, 203-776-WNPR. We're going to take a quick break and come right back with more great titles to read. You can tweet us at FaithWNPR, FaithWNPR, or join the conversation with us on Facebook. Search The Faith Middleton Show. Thanks to you for listening and to our talented team, senior producer Lori Mack and producer Jonathan McNichol. Monfrat, at Monfrat on Twitter, just said to us, Necessary Errors by Caleb Crane, Young Expats in Prague in the early 90s, beautifully written, best novel I have read this year. Then then on Facebook, we heard from Casey Rondini LaPlante saying, if you like The Fault in Our Stars, try Eleanor and Park by Rainbow Rowell, a romance for teens about two sort of outcasts in the Midwest in the 1980s. Fantastic for high school teens. So that is Eleanor and Park. Roxanne, by phone from Texas. Go ahead, Roxanne Cody.
So this is an absolutely hilarious book that might begin to help us understand what's going on in Washington, if there's any understanding to be done. It's called This Town by Mark Leibovich. He's the national correspondent for New York Times Magazine. This is fantastic. He is an equal opportunity abuser. He opens with Tim Russert's funeral. You know, the ultimate getting together and posturing of being appropriately solemn as you're preening for the press. Tim Russert apparently didn't have a lot of use for Bill or Hillary Clinton, yet they're, you know, grieving in as big and magnificent a way as anybody else. And he goes on to explain the cast of characters in a way that you are reminded how people have now moved to Washington and stayed there, and because they could make a lot of money. And staying there has been corrosive to the whole process. And what made me think about it is, earlier today I went to the LBJ Library here in Austin, which is an extraordinary library, but you are reminded, you know, however he did it, you know, loving people, pushing them, cajoling them, charming them. The amount of legislation that Lyndon Johnson got through Congress between the beginning of 1964 and the end of his term in 1968, you know, including NPR, civil rights, Medicare. Yeah. I mean, some of the things that we just consider basic.
Roxanne, I call him the quiet Roosevelt. Not quiet, really.
Yeah, nothing quiet, really. They have a lot of phone recordings of his conversation. There's one that I happened to pick up where he's on the phone with Adam Clayton Powell and just lambasting him for not supporting a bill that he was supposed to. This exquisite conversation with Jackie Kennedy.
I mean, unrecognized Roosevelt. Yeah. You know, Roosevelt, too. So 2.0, I guess I should say. Roxanne, thank you so much for...
You're welcome.
You know, here you are on the road in Texas and still joining us, so we really appreciate it.
Well, I love being with all of you. I'll be back in Connecticut tomorrow.
Okay, good luck on Read to Grow.
Oh, thanks this so Saturday. Much, Faith.
Okay.
I appreciate you letting us talk
about it. Love to. Okay.
Okay.
Take
Bye-bye.
Care. Bye-bye. Barbara Faith Middleton at 203-776-9677 here on The Book Show. If you've got a book to recommend, please call us now. Go ahead, Barbara. I know you do.
I do. Hi, Faith. I love your show.
Oh, thanks.
I'm calling to recommend the book called On Paper. It's it's the 2,000-year history on the everything of paper. I think I got that wrong, but it's by Nicholas Basbains. And it chronicles the beginnings of paper from China to Japan, papermaking in the United States as an art form. And it's fascinating. And you can even read it on Kindle if you want. But,
okay. So on on paper. And Nicholas, what was the last name?
Basbains.
And how do you spell it? Do you know?
P-A-S-P-A-N-E-S. I just finished reading it. And it's Basbains. Even a section
okay.
on... 9/11 and paper and how that was all.
Huh, interesting.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye. I love paper, so it interests me. Yes. Rose Quiella, what do you have?
Well, Faith, after reading the New York Times review of Mary Oliver's new book of poetry called Dog Songs.
Isn't that just a great story in the Times about her?
The story was wonderful, and I had to have the book, as a nurse would say, stat.
I wanted to run out and get it, too.
So I ran out, and I did buy it, and I read half of it before I paid for the book and then got home, finished it, mailed it out to a friend as a gift, not knowing that I had already read it. I don't know if that makes it still a gift. And then went out and bought another copy and mailed that out. So I still don't have my own copy. But anyway, A little bit about Mary Oliver quickly. She's a Pulitzer Prize-winning author. She won the National Book Award, and her agent said, I think you ought to do a book of poems about the dogs who have graced your life, and she does. And I'll tell you, I was weeping in the bookstore reading at once laughing. So she talks about Bear and Ricky and Lucy and Percy after Shelley, of course, and how these dogs have offered a her poems offer us a window into the world of dogs.
How do I say this, Rose? Because what? This could sound kind of schmaltzy.
I know.
And shtick-like.
I know.
But honestly, it is. It has that grace and intelligence that Mary Oliver has. And
that's
somehow, you know, in a kind of tenderness about these animals, she somehow pulls this off. It's as if she were doing a whole thing on human beings and her relationships with different human beings.
That's right. And that's why I wanted to throw in the stuff that she did win a Pulitzer. She did win. I didn't want her to be seen as some intellectual lightweight. You know, she's brilliant.
Oh,
and
she's
it's
great.
Mary Oliver's book of poetry called Dog Songs.
Yeah. And so because you mentioned that, I'll say that John Katz, a lot of people, he writes about Bedlam Farm and his animals on the farm, especially his dogs. And he has a new book out called The Second Chance Dog. And this is about a guard dog that he ends up with, part pit bull and part, I think, shepherd mix. And it is the question is, how do you get a dog that's been trained as a guard dog? Mm. And there's a reason he has to make friends with this dog. There's a really big reason he has to. And it is a struggle. But, I glanced into parts of this book, but I wanted to let you know it's out there for our dog lovers. The Second Chance Dog by John Katz, K-A-T-Z. Lee Jacobus, what do you have?
I've got a very quirky novel written by a really good writer who is very widely published. And in fact, won a Vonnegut Award. People think of his writing sometimes as being like Vonnegut. His name is Jacob Appel, A-P-P-E-L. And he does many things. He's got many degrees in many different fields, but he happens to be in New York City as a tour guide right now. And a writer. So anyone who likes New York City is going to love this book. It's called The Biology of Luck. And it's about a fellow named Larry Bloom who is courting a woman named Sunshine Hart. You already get the idea that there's a little quirkiness there. But it's truly quirky because every other chapter or so, what you are reading is the novel that Larry Bloom, the character, has written called The Biology of Luck. And what he's doing in this day, all takes place in one day. He's going to have dinner with Sunshine Hart. He just got a letter in the mail from his publisher, which either says that this book is going to be published or not. He takes it and puts it inside his coat, and he decides he's going to open it at the end of the day when he has dinner with Sunshine Hart. Of course, what he really wants to do is take Sunshine Hart to bed, because in fact, even at age 30, he has not yet been to bed. And this makes the novel very, very complex and very interesting and very human. So,
And you know he wants this on Broadway. I mean, you just can't name someone Sunshine Hart without having
absolutely
intentions.
Right. No, and this book has gotten a lot of buzz. It's he's actually written. He's Apple has read here in New York in Westbrook, a small bookstore in Westbrook, Connecticut. He's been reading all over the state, and the book is called The Biology of Luck, and it's by Jacob Appel, A-P-P-E-L. It's a brand new book. It's really quite terrific.
Thank you, Lee. We have a new book of poetry out from Billy Collins, who was our poet laureate. And this one is called Aimless Love. Now, to be fair, part of it is a recycling, as authors do at the insistence of their publishers often, pulling poems from a lot of different books. And then there is a section within here about new work that he has done. So, you know, this is a way for people who don't have enough new work to come out with something. And so I just wanted to let you know, here's an example. The Music of the Spheres. the woman on the radio who was lodging the old complaint that her husband never listens to her reminded me of the music of the spheres, that chord of seven notes, one for each of the visible planets, which has been sounding since the beginning of the universe and which we can never hear. According to Pythagoras, because we hear it all the time, so it sounds the same as silence. But let's say the needle were lifted from the spinning grooves of those celestial orbs, then people would stop on the streets and look up, and others would stop in the fields, and hikers would stop in the woods and look this way and that, as if they were hearing something for the first time, and that husband would lower the newspaper from his face, look at his wife, who has been standing in the doorway, and ask, "Did you just say something, dear?"
That's wonderful.
That's Aimless Love, new and selected poems from Billy Collins. Libby, welcome to the show.
Oh, hi, Faith. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Oh, I'm glad you're on the show. What do you have, Libby?
On Anvil by Jim Herity. It's a brand new novel by a brand new author and a brand new publisher in West Cornwall, Connecticut.
So it's called On
Anvil, A-N-V-I-L.
And it is a novel. What kind of book is it, and why is it good?
It's good because it makes you think. It makes you think hard. It makes you think outside the box.
What is it? It's a story of what?
A story about a man named Cal, who we meet him at his lowest point of his life when we meet him in the beginning of the book, and we watch him climb out of his basement as he is climbing up the side of a really hot, desperate desert mountain in Santa Fe. And when he reaches the top, in the novel, he reaches also the top in his inside, in his brain. And he gets to the place of recovery. And it's a great book for readers who love spiritual reads.
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Okay. Thank you, Libby. Thank you. Thank you so much for calling the show.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. We have an email from Barbara Yakovachi in Watertown, Connecticut. I'm sorry if I'm mispronouncing your last name. Does anyone on your panel know anything about Freud's Mistress? We're going to choose it for our next book club. Also, Unbroken is one of the best books I've ever read as well. So what about Freud's Mistress? Anybody here?
I've just heard that it's not a bad book, but I don't know really much about it. I haven't read it.
Okay.
But, of course, the question is which mistress or...
Ed, Faith Middleton and the gang, welcome to the book show.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Ed.
I have to say also, I read Unbroken. It was fantastic. I agree with you.
Oh, good. Okay, go ahead.
Me too.
Shantaram by Gregory David Roberts.
Oh, yes, I read this.
Oh, that's such a fantastic book.
Yeah.
It's become my favorite book.
Can you say something about it?
Well, you know, this guy, it takes place in India, and he's just gone into hiding. He's decided to give up everything that he's known and start a new life because he was serving a sentence in prison for robbing people to feed his heroin addiction. And he escapes in broad daylight and goes into hiding in Bombay. And you know, is very aware that he has to give everything up and become this other person. And he ends up learning more about himself and becoming a better person than he ever dreamed was possible through the people that he meets. And he learns different perspectives. Also, he sees, you know, I remember one scene in particular, you know, he's passing by the expansive slums in India, and he's filled with shame at his own good fortune by comparison to what he sees. And in, you know, the space of several months, he finds himself living in those slums and seeing them from a different perspective, that they're not all as horrible as he had imagined them to be, and that there's a lot of, you know, life going on there.
Yeah, he takes us into that world, and you get to have connect with all these characters in this so-called slum, and you see, you know, as I'm sure is true in a lot of high poverty neighborhoods, you know, amazing individual people. Okay, thank you so much. Shantaram is the name of that book. Thank you so much for being on the book show. Thanks to Lee Jacobus, Rose Creeler, and Roxanne Cody, as always. This show is about the richness of life. You can find the books, people, recipes, wine, and cocktails we feature online anytime at WNPR.org. Click on Programs. In New Haven, I'm Faith Middleton.